This is Jump in Tucson. I am Roman Camposano in today for Dr. Ed Ackerley. Jump in Tucson. Jump in Tucson's Monday theme is Wonder, where we celebrate the good things going on at the University of Arizona, including student projects, student learning, student outcomes, as well as top-level performances by artist athletes, and especially top-tier research going on with faculty and scientists at the University of Arizona. With that in mind, our guest this morning is Dr. Elliot Chu, Interim Senior Vice President of Research and Innovation at the University of Arizona. Doctor, tell us how your educational and professional journey, and how you became a Senior Vice President of Research and Innovation at the University of Arizona. And tell us what that business card looks like too.
Thank you very much, Roman. It's a real pleasure to be here and talk a little bit about the research enterprise at the University of Arizona. So, I was an undergraduate at Stanford University a while back and studying physics, and really wanted to understand kind of the basics of how the universe came about and kind of the fundamental particles and forces that drive that. So I went to grad school after that to get a PhD in physics, ended up in Chicago doing something called a postdoc for a little bit, for about 5 years, and then came here in 1996. So I've been here a little over 28 years so far.
28 years, fantastic. Yeah. Well, and in that time, research and innovation are the cornerstones of a Research One institution like the University of Arizona. What are some of the exciting projects that are being worked on by scientists and at the faculty?
Yeah, I'm really excited about the fact that we have a huge breadth of research happening at the University of Arizona. So it's everything from space sciences to native languages. I'll give you a few examples. So one of them that's probably known worldwide is we built one of the cameras used on the James Webb Space Telescope.
Okay.
And that one is called NearCam, was developed by a faculty member here at the university. And all the pretty pictures that you see from the James Webb Telescope are basically that camera. So that's amazing that we have faculty. We recently got a grant, though, to support native languages.
Okay.
This is kind of to help provide a place to revitalize native languages, and it was a fairly large grant that we got for that. I'll just mention one other thing that's kind of cool. We have one of our faculty members, Chris Walker, got a grant to build a balloon experiment that would take pictures of the universe in a different way, and it's kind of studying the life cycle of stars in our galaxies. And what was interesting is that the balloon flew around Antarctica and circled Antarctica for, I think it was over 60 days, and set the record for the longest balloon flight ever by an experiment.
Well, that's fascinating stuff. You know, growing up as a kid, I would think about, you know, moon and the stars and all that good stuff. And I grew up south of the south side, but not necessarily Sal Rita. So it's right by Raytheon in that area, yep. A little bit south in Summit, Arizona. I think it has a name now. They gave it a name after I left. So,
okay.
But, you know, being out there, it's fascinating just to look and see what the universe is all about. One of my favorite places to go is actually the planetarium there for, like, the Pink Floyd.
Oh, yeah.
Those kind of things. Do they still have those?
Absolutely.
At the Flandreau?
So the Flandreau Science Center. We bring about over 60,000 guests to the university through that. A lot of kids who get their first experience. One of them was Danny DeLagostino, who's now the principal investigator for the follow-on mission to OSIRIS-REx. And she kind of got her, from my understanding, is she first kind of got her experience with the stars by going to our planetarium, and now she's kind of leading this huge mission.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow. Goosebumps, man.
Exactly. It's amazing the kind of activity, you know, the outreach the university has and the impact that it can have on people's lives.
So important. And so why is innovation so important to an institution like the University of Arizona?
Oh, absolutely. So we like to think of research is not just starting with, you know, in some lab with people white coats. By the way, that's a myth. Most people don't wear white coats on campus. But
what about the white coat you're wearing now? I'm kidding.
No, I actually don't wear white coat very often. But we like to think of it as a whole life cycle of doing basic research, you know, like mine, trying to understand the origins of the universe, all the way to be able to take those ideas, maybe commercialize them, bring them out to the public, and take those ideas and have an impact on our community. So it's that's why the office I run is called Research Innovation, and the innovation part becomes part of our impact. I'll give a couple examples. So we one of our faculty members, John Galliano, has developed, been studying valley fever forever, and you know, in Arizona, valley fever is a
John Galliano, yes. Yeah.
And he's developed a vaccine with his colleagues that would be the first vaccine that would protect both dogs as well as humans. And it's an antifungal vaccine, which is also very rare. It's in clinical trials right now, and it would save Arizona's, you know, upwards of $20 million a year for their pets not having to deal with valley fever in their dogs. And for those humans who get infected with valley fever, you know, some of them are disabled for life, and some people have died from valley fever.
Yes.
Being able to be protected from that is just amazing. So that, to me, having that sort of impact from innovative ideas that people have worked on for decades is really kind of the reason why we're so excited about the innovation ecosystem that we have.
Wow. Yeah. And super important, super important research for a super, super important cause. And the valley fever piece actually hit me. My first dog had valley fever. He was named was Saber, Rottweiler, wonderful dog, and yeah, he had that, man. It's not fun.
Yeah, and imagine that, you know, when you went to the vet, you just got a shot, and that never happened. I mean, you wouldn't know that would, you know, that
right.
predicting the future,
right.
But having gone through it, it's amazing. Just to give you one more example
sure.
of the kind of interesting things, we have another faculty member. They created this idea of how to tell if the person who's answering questions is not a robot.
Okay.
And also that when you're logging on to, say, you know, some website, that it's you and not somebody else. And this is not by, you know, answering questions. It's actually how you as you're responding and typing things in, it's looking at that response and can tell that. That's created a company called NeuroID, and recently Experian, one of the three credit companies, bought it over as a way. So here's a, you know, basic research idea that people are just looking about how we understand people's responses and are able to now tell that, you know, it's actually you and not me who's logging on to your
based on neuro, is that the keystrokes? Or
yeah, the keystrokes and how you type things and how you use your mouse and things like that.
Interesting. Wow. Well, this is some fascinating information. We are speaking with Dr. Elliot Chu, Interim Vice President, Interim Senior Vice President of Research and Innovation at the University of Arizona. You are listening to Jump In Tucson, KVOI, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. We'll be back right after the break. All right. Welcome back to Jump In Tucson. This is Roman J. Campuzano in for Dr. Ed Ackerley. Our guest this morning is Dr. Elliot Chu, and we've been chatting with him just a little bit about a few different things in respect to the work that he does as Interim Senior Vice President of Research and Innovation at the University of Arizona. Doctor, tell us about the grant that the $1 million grant gift that you received for the University of Arizona's Arizona Astrobiology Center that has received $1 million gift from Eugene
Zhang.
Thank you for that. A retired Google software developer turned philanthropist to support research exploring the origins of life and consciousness. Can you tell us a little bit about that grant?
Yeah, thank you very much. First of all, we have a new center called the Arizona Astrobiology Center, which was started by Dante Loretta to study this kind of intersection between the origins of life and the beginnings of consciousness. And so we received this $1 million gift from Eugene Zhang to help support that effort. It's really interesting, you know, the academic field of consciousness studies kind of explores the mysteries of how we experience the world, and it really focuses on thoughts and feelings emerging from the brain. This is a field that brings together things like philosophy and psychology and neuroscience. And interestingly enough, we have a Center for Consciousness on the campus, and that's done some really groundbreaking work and has a bi-yearly conference on consciousness. And our center and the work that Eugene Zhang will allow us to do will really be able to help explore both consciousness, but how it relates to the beginnings of life.
Mm. So how is research helping to explain these vital questions?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, so Dante Loretta, who started this center, was the principal investigator on a mission called OSIRIS-REx. And OSIRIS-REx was a mission that went to an asteroid, gathered some sample, and brought it back. It was the first mission that NASA had supported,
yes.
And it was run through the University of Arizona. And that mission, by looking at that sample, they found that that material contains water and also carbon, which are two of the real key elements of life. And so the idea behind this kind of research is that we're able to, there's a theory that people have that the Earth was seeded by asteroids, that was hit by a bunch of these asteroids that contain these precursors of life. And by studying that, we're by able to have a sample that we can use. The OSIRIS-REx mission brought back 120 grams. It doesn't sound like a lot. It's about 4 ounces or so. And you could fit it in a Coke can.
Okay.
But, and some of that sample, we actually have it on display at the Gem and Mineral Museum downtown, but we also have some samples given to us. And some of the sample is being stored at the Johnson Space Center for future researchers, because as new techniques come along, they'll have that sample, and new, you know, researchers down the line will be able to take that same sample and use different techniques to study it.
How long ago was the OSIRIS-REx mission?
So it was... It's interesting, you know, research often takes a lot longer. I think it was originally proposed in the early thousands by Michael Drake, and Dante Loretta was a young assistant professor. Michael Drake unfortunately passed away. We received, I believe it was approval of the mission in something around 2000, I'm going to make it up, but 2010, and it was launched in 2016. And it spent over almost 7 years, and it arrived back in the Utah desert in 2023, so in September 2023. So I actually was at the launch in 2016, so
okay.
It was amazing to see that thing take off, and then I was also able to see it return in the Utah desert.
Wow. Wow, that's something. I believe I was at the OSIRIS-REx return party that they had downtown. Were you there?
I was actually in Utah. I got to actually see the helicopters take off and go for the thing. Funny story, you know, all these missions have their potential failure points. And one of the failure points, unfortunately, was the parachute. It was miswired, and it was falling through. And the last second, they had their backup. Had an explosive charge that blew, that actually launched the parachute, but otherwise it would have unfortunately smashed into the desert. So
wow.
It's you know, science is challenging and risky, and sometimes luckily we do build into backups, and there was a reason to do that, but you know, sometimes you just never know what could cause a challenge.
Well, you have to wonder what kind of challenge happened to make that protocol a reality. So that's you know, what did smash into the Earth then? That shouldn't have smashed into the Earth.
Yeah. Well, there have been some missions where the parachute didn't open, but luckily we had a great crew who understood that you need backups, and the backup worked. And now we have this amazing sample that that scientists are able to look at.
Wonderful. Another question here. How does the research from the OSIRIS-REx mission affect these questions here?
So, as I said, it sort of helps us with understanding the origins of life and give us some insight in that. But, you know, there's a really interesting problem that we have is that one of the challenges we have is, and this center is going to be working on that, is defining what is life itself. You know, there are a lot of theories that said, well, you know it when you see it kind of thing.
Yes.
But there's also the question of, you know, people have come up with different criteria, and every time they come up with a criteria, you can find things that we don't think are living things that satisfy that criteria. So I think having center, yeah. So, you know, for instance, people say things move on their own, but there are things that do move. That are not, that we wouldn't consider life. You know, the things it says, well, it consumes energy, or reproduces, but there are other types of systems where things seem to reproduce, not in the way that we think of, you know, like life, but that have those same characteristics. So a big kind of overarching question is, what is life? You know, and then the center also will be addressing the question of, you know, how did life get here? And what is it going to, is there a life out there? You know, that's a huge question for us.
Oh, wow. Two very, very important questions. If we didn't have to, you know, go to work and be in a radio station booth and, you know, dress up for radio and things of that sort, wear white coats and things of that sort, you know, we wouldn't have anything else to think about.
Absolutely. The cool thing about being at a university like the University of Arizona is that we have the opportunity to ask big questions and train the next generation of people who ask big questions. And sometimes those questions, whether they satisfy our curiosity, sometimes they actually satisfy, you know, the ability to make the society and the world a better place. And I think that the work that's happening at a center like the Arizona Astrobiology Center is doing both. It's both asking big questions, it's training the next generation of people to go out and be able to do that kind of work, but it's also, we never know what might come of this kind of research. Sometimes, I'll give you an example, when people were studying X-rays, it was just kind of a curiosity, and now we use it all the time.
Right.
And it was sort of almost an accident. Somebody left a plate out in the out that was reacted to radioactive materials. Came back and saw this image of it and realized that, hey, there's something, there's a utilization that we can have. But they were just doing kind of pure research. So I really like that idea that we can start from pure research, asking big questions, and potentially changing people's lives.
Absolutely, and a way of life in doing things from now on. Absolutely fascinating. It looks like we have a couple of minutes here before we end here. Doctor, what's one thing that you want everybody to know about the kind of research that's happening at the University of Arizona in your position?
People probably don't know that, but their research enterprise is about almost a billion dollars. We're probably going to cross that threshold of $1 billion.
With
that's
a B.
With
yes.
a B, not an M.
Yes.
That's a huge amount of research that's coming into the university. As I said, it's helping us train the next generation of scientists, but also the next generation of our workforce. And I think that having such a huge enterprise allows us, has one, a big economic impact. You know, we're bringing dollars externally into the state and our local economy to provide workforce.
So important, yes.
But we're also asking really big questions, you know, questions that we have a research program called New Freedoms of Sound. It's a center that we were just awarded about a year ago.
Okay.
And this is taking techniques that have been used, so for instance, in quantum mechanics and understanding sound waves, and it will transform how we do telecommunications and actually location of things. The reason it's so interesting is, believe it or not, in your cell phone, some of your chips inside there communicate via sound, not electrical signals.
Okay.
I know that you use your cell phone
for
speaking, but the actual chips communicate with sound. And the reason they do that is because sound, you can actually get rid of noise easier in that particular domain using sound waves rather than electrical waves. And this is the kind of research that can be done at the University of Arizona. And so really pushing the boundaries of what we can do with research and trying to understand, why we're, you know, how do we get here and where are we going are some really basic questions that we can answer at the university.
Wonderful, Doctor. Thank you. And how can listeners find out more information?
So with regards to OSIRIS-REx, they can go to osirisrex.arizona.edu. And if they want to learn more about research, it's research.arizona.edu.
Wonderful. You are listening to KBOI 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk show. This is Wonder, celebrating the good things at the University of Arizona on Jump in Tucson. I'm Roman Camposano, sitting in for Dr. Ed Ackerley. When we return, we'll be revisiting the second half of our interview from last Monday with Dr. Robert Robbins, outgoing president of the University of Arizona. You're listening to Jump in Tucson.
Well, welcome back to Jump in Tucson. It's a great honor and privilege to have with us in studio this morning the president of the University of Arizona, Dr. Robert Robbins, and his reflections on his 7 years as president of a great institution, the University of Arizona. So welcome back.
Thank you, Ed.
So let's talk a little bit when you came in. Who would have known when you came into the university setting that you had a lot of challenges that you were working on? One of them was of course, your experience as a surgeon and all that whole side of your life that is saving people's lives and so forth. But one of the things you were tasked with was to kind of look at the health sciences side of things and come up with part of the strategic plan of what you might do there. And what a great result has happened from that that exit. Painful maybe in the beginning, but what a fantastic, it's just kind of like surgery. Might be painful in the beginning, but the result afterwards is pretty powerful.
Yeah, I've experienced no pain in this job. Literally. Yeah. It has been a joy every day, no matter how challenging it may seem. I see it as an opportunity mm-hmm. to make a difference. Even with all of the things that have gone on, and including COVID that we'll talk about, but the health sciences, when I came in, we had research expenditures of around $600 million, and we'll hit $1 billion this
wow.
year.
Yeah.
And the health sciences has been probably the largest part of that, but certainly, as we talked about before, science and in engineering and other places, optical sciences is world class. The stuff they're doing with quantum networking is truly groundbreaking. So the focus on health sciences, obviously from my background, I knew we could perform better, and that's usually where you see big increases in research productivity. It's when, like ASU starting a medical school, and President Crow and I have been talking about this for about almost 10 years now about right. ASU and their medical school, and that will increase their research expenditures just like it has here. And so we had all the pieces here. We have not one but two medical schools and incredible faculty. And there was a great opportunity to amplify and increase the research done out of the health sciences.
Right. And you did a great job of managing through that process and raising the bar for them. And we were just talking about how we've had to several people from the health sciences side come in and talk about their research and what they're doing and amazing stuff going on at the University of Arizona. Well, like I said, the one of the challenges that we all faced for a little while there was COVID-19. And I just have to say, obviously I'm a fan of yours and I'm a fan of the university, but the way you and Dr. Carmona were able to respond and set a model perhaps for the nation of how to handle the whole, you know, teaching, how do we do teaching, how do we do immunizations, how do we get this, how do we make this work and have it be impactful, but you know, maybe not in a negative sense. And you did a great job, even with commencement and the number of in-person commencements that you did. It was pretty amazing. So, can you talk a little bit about the COVID-19 response? And
yeah, I was lucky. I mean, Dr. Carmona, Rich Carmona, is a national treasure. He was the 70th Surgeon General, and I've known him for a long, long time, being surgeons from the Bay Area. And when I got here, I met with him and had dinner, and you know, he gave me a rundown of where he thought there were opportunities in the university. And then when COVID happened about 3 years later, I gave him a call and said, Rich, I really need you to right. come and help me with this. And he instituted the instant command system and built that out with incredible people that helped us lead through COVID. We were one of the largest sites for vaccination with the drive-through mm-hmm. of the mall. Chris Kopeck and his
right.
team
awesome.
Was just incredible. You know, there was some criticism about keeping classes and going because some of the professors didn't want to be exposed. And certainly we said that if you have a medical condition or if you live with someone that has a medical condition, then just teach your class online. But I'm really proud that we kept things going. And as you said, every year about this time, I get to stand up for like 6 years in a row now and say, We're proud to welcome the largest incoming first-year class, the most meritorious and most diverse in the university's history. So we kept growing 2, 3, 4% every year, even through COVID. And I'm so, I mean, Mike Dake, the Senior Vice President for Health Affairs, and several immunologists and virologists, we would spend 3:30 to 5 most Tuesday and Thursday afternoons talking about how can we attack this and how can we keep people safe but keep the university open. And I think that's why a lot of students chose the University of Arizona, plus all of our incredible academic programs. They come for the professors and their mentorship and their teaching. But the weather's great. We've got a beautiful campus. We've got great sports and arts. And that to keep giving them the opportunity to learn was something that I'll always cherish.
Yeah. You know, I teach leadership, and when you came over to my class and talked a couple times, and when the previous mayor, you came in and we gave a salute to the previous mayor because he had been talking to my classes for years. And you know, the reflection I have is just leadership and how powerful your leadership has been. And Mitch and I are fans of John Gordon, and just positive leadership. And it's really easy in a large organization like this to get down on a lot of stuff. And it's that's the low-hanging fruit. But as a strong leader, it's important that we look at the successes and build on those. And if we do have a challenge, as you said, learn from that,
right,
and try to make it better. And I just have to, especially with the COVID-19 response and even the campus unrest last spring and so forth, U of A has led in these areas of taking on these challenges and doing them, learning from them and doing a good job. And a lot of that points right back to you and your leadership. And so for that, we're very thankful for that. So let's talk a little bit about athletics and the arts. You know, you said that both the arts and athletics are the front porch of the university. It's what the community comes and sees. You know, they don't see the research necessarily going on in the labs. Maybe they might see the effects of that, but they don't see the actual research going on. But the arts and the athletics is something they see on a regular basis. And so specifically with the arts, what an amazing art community we have at the university, and what is out there for people to experience.
Yeah, I highlighted the dance program. You know, it's like going to Broadway when you go to see our students perform in the Stevie Eller Dance Theater. But we've got a renowned Center for Creative Photography that houses some of the all-time greats, including Ansel Adams and others. The museum with the de Kooning that was,
yeah,
I say, on loan in, right, Silver City, New Mexico
for
30-something years, is now back and restored for free by the Getty Museum in Los Angeles. So we've got an incredible collection. We need a new art museum for sure, because the collection is better than the building that houses it. Dean Andy Scholes has done an incredible job with the arts, and eventually we need to redo Centennial Hall.
Right.
There's no question about it. I kind of thought we needed to build a new place, but that it has such historic significance, but it needs its own campaign to redo it. And I hope I live long enough to see Centennial Hall restored and
to its glory. Some great lofty ideas of maybe putting in a basement with moving the stage a little bit and reconfiguring it so that it can accommodate the big 2,500 seat thing, but also do some more intimate things. You know, it's a little bit more versatility, I guess, is the word. So that would be kind of a cool thing to do. Well, you know, you've done great with leadership and facing challenges, whether it be campus safety or whether it be online education and moving in those directions. It's been sustainability, all sorts of things that you've been able to do. When we come back, I want to spend the last segment just talking about Bobby Robbins and about you and how you feel about things and what the future might mean for the next few years for you, and whether or not you're getting back into the operating room or what's going to be your next thing up. So we're talking with Dr. Robert Robbins. We'll be back on Jump in Tucson after the break. Word from our great sponsors. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Wonder Series where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. It is my distinct privilege and honor to have the last hour with President Robert Robbins. We just want to talk a little bit here about you and about, you know, you're a person just like anybody else, and you have dreams and hopes and dreams. When you came into the business, into the situation, the organization, you had a vision for what you might want to be able to accomplish. And now, as you're heading into the last few weeks of your tenure, some reflections on the power of being a president and what's that meant in your own personal life and in your professional life.
As I said at the outset, it's been the most joyful, blessed time of my professional life. Obviously, I enjoyed doing heart surgery and running one of the largest medical centers, the largest medical center in the world. But this has been something that I will cherish, and I'm grateful that the Regents gave me the opportunity to be here for 7 years. There are a couple of things that that we haven't covered that I hope to see. I mentioned CAMI.
Right.
And the, I think the most important thing that has occurred in health in the last 25 years is mapping the human genome.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the next 25 years, it'll be a better understanding of the human immunome. Your immunological responses, whether it be in cancer therapy, in inflammation, which is now part of every cardiovascular disease, and more data showing that it's important in dementia and Alzheimer's disease. So inflammation will be a big part of CAMI. Autoimmunity, when your immune system not fights bugs or other processes, but it attacks your own organs like your brain or your heart or your liver or kidneys, lupus or rheumatoid arthritis or things like that. Transplant immunology, aging, there's a lot of data that aging is affected by your immune system. As we get older, our immune system doesn't work as well. And then the obvious last fifth part of CAMI is going to be about infectious diseases, mm-hmm. and whether it be bacterial, viral, protozoal, fungal, whatever. So Dr. Deepta Bhattacharya worked in a lab that I collaborated with closely at Stanford, so I've watched him for years. He is the right leader. He's brilliant. He was part of that group that helped us through COVID in better understanding the immunological responses and how we needed to have antibody tests and all the things that we did to make COVID successful. The second thing is I'm really excited about there's going to be a ribbon cutting. The groundbreaking happened a year and a half ago for the new JTED Health Sciences High School. Mm-hmm. And that's an idea that I brought from Dr. DeBakey in Houston and the Michael E. DeBakey High School for the Health Sciences. And I took a team down there, and I'm just incredibly happy that our students, particularly those high school and middle school students in South Tucson, are going to have the opportunity to go to a high school that's focused on the health sciences and help them make their journey on to being either a nurse, a technician, some career lifelong service to others through the health sciences, or even be, a brain surgeon or whatever they want to be. There should be no limit. As far as what I'm going to do, I want to get to work October 1st doing something.
Right.
And I thankfully, I'm going to be a part of the Department of Surgery here. Dr. Jeff Gertner is the chair of surgery, and we've got a new cardiac surgeon who's come in to rebuild the program. We've got a new director of the Sarver Heart Institute, so I'm really excited about all the things that I can be a part of and hopefully help contribute locally here. I want to take some time to focus on writing and doing some research and reflection on higher education and the challenges, particularly around finances,
mm-hmm.
Around healthcare policy, and around the incredible challenges that we have with intercollegiate athletics. So, whether I spend some time at a policy institute or my ultimate goal is to do this again, to find another university that will value the energy and talents that I bring, and I'm hoping that that'll be sometime in the future. But for right now, I'm going to be here in Tucson. I'm going to be a Wildcat for life, and no matter where I end up, I'll always be a Wildcat at heart.
Well, I speak for, you know, I'm employed. I have a full disclosure. I've been a faculty member at the university for 32 years now, 33 years, I think it is. And I've seen several presidents come and go and engaged with all of them. And I can honestly say that you've done a great job.
And thank you, Ed.
We're proud of what you've done and your leadership and what you've had to face and what you stood steadfast in your principles and so forth. And you've been a good president. And I speak for many, 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 many employees who thank you for your service. And it's sometimes your job is kind of a thankless job. Everybody's an expert.
Yep.
And everybody knows what they're going to do, and we talked about that, but we appreciate your service to the university, and on behalf of the students that I've taught, thank you for that opportunity to be able to make a difference in their lives.
Well, I will be here to help support President Garamella any way I can. Just as President Schaefer and President Likens have done for me, President Pacheco to somewhat mm-hmm. lesser extent, and President Koffler I knew briefly before he passed. And so we are all very focused on helping our new president lead this great institution, and I know that he's going to do a great job, because this is an incredible place. And it will continue to get better with time.
Thank you so much for everything you've done for the community and for in my case, students. I just think it's really powerful what you've done for students. And we thank you for your service to the university and look forward to interacting with you in the future. And thanks for bringing us wonder.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Ackerley, thank you for everything you've done at the University of Arizona, for doing this show, for all of your commitment to the community, running for mayor. And this is an incredible platform for you to amplify and force multiply all the positive things that are going on at the University of Arizona. So
great.
Thank you.
Great. Who knows, we might have you back sometime when you write that New York Times bestseller, and we have to have a little book tour. We'll start it right here.
Perfect.
When we would do that.
I look forward to that.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Robert Robbins, the president of the University of Arizona, who concludes his tenure of over 7 years as president of this fine institution, and as I said, bringing us the wonder that makes the University of Arizona great. And good luck to you in your future endeavors as we continue to stay in touch. And I'll keep using that cell phone and texting you on a regular basis.
Please do, Ed. Thank you so much for having me on your program.
Okay, God bless.
God bless you.
If you'd like to be interviewed on Jump in Tucson and share your success story, go to jumpintucson.com and let us know a little bit about you. And who knows, maybe you'll be sitting in Dr. Robbins' chair being interviewed on Jump in Tucson. Coming up on Tuesday, Ted Maxwell will host and talk about the engagement hour. Grant Kruger will be here on Wednesday talking about restaurants and politics. And Tom Moulton will be here on Thursday talking about Tucson and all the good things we have going on in attractions. And I'll be back next Friday with success stories. Jump in Tucson broadcast from the Bustos Media Studios and KVOI 1030 AM The Voice. Thank you for listening, and we hope that you will jump in Tucson.